But the pulse of hatred, the pulse of destruction, this terrible booming sound against the wall. And then what did the defendants of Masada try to do? They tried to build another wall inside the other wall so that when the one collapsed, they have another wall. But that didn't do much to stop the Romans. The Romans came anyway, bashing down the next wall. And what did the inhabitants of Masada do? Famous story, you know, they chose to cut their own throats and die by suicide. And when I think of that picture, both of Israel and of Masada, I hear the words of the Lord through his prophets ringing in my ears again. When God says to the prophets, O Israel, why will you die? Why do you choose death? Well, let's try to capture this picture again about the man building the wall, standing in the gap to save the nation. God says, I looked through Israel, I couldn't find one. Where are the men who stand in the gap? What is the picture saying to us? Well, to capture this picture, let us go back a bit further again. The picture is of God building a nation represented by the city of Jerusalem. He builds up this nation. Isaiah portrays this in the picture of the vine in Isaiah chapter 5. He took a vine from Egypt. He planted the vine in the new land, the promised land. And he built a wall around it. And he put up watchtowers that people would look out and protect that vineyard. And he made that vineyard to prosper. But instead of bringing forth sweet fruit, it brought forth sour fruit. It became a disappointment to God, a fruitless nation. And God then has to turn against his people. Because God is just, because God is holy, let us get one principle clearly into our mind. He will judge any sinner whatsoever, be he a believer or an unbeliever. That is the principle of the Word of God that we shall see in a moment. But there is the picture. Jerusalem, the golden, as it is termed. Golden because when the sun shines upon its walls, it reflects a golden kind of light. Jerusalem, the golden, the city of God. And there, how many psalms in the Old Testament sing the praises of Jerusalem in the day of its glory? The city of God set upon a hill which cannot be hid, a light to the nations. And it's precisely that picture that the Lord Jesus uses in Matthew chapter 5, you will remember. You are the light of the world. A city set upon a hill which cannot be hidden. You are the new Jerusalem in which God's glory is manifested. That causes my heart to ache when I say those words. It causes my heart to ache. Why is this so? Because Paul speaks of the church as the glory of Christ. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 23. The church, which is the glory of Christ, his servants in the church, and the church itself, are the glory of Christ. And you say, why does your heart ache? Well, look around you. Look at the church today. Is it the glory of Christ? Does the church manifest its glory? The reputation of the church in Hong Kong is so bad today that it's difficult even to get some clear-thinking people to go to church anymore. Is the church that is the glory of Christ? Forget it. If that's the glory of Christ, I don't need Christ either. My heart aches. Paul in his day was able to speak without shame, without apology, without embarrassment of the church as the glory of Christ. Can we do that? In Ephesians chapter 3, at the last part of Ephesians chapter 3, Paul speaks about the glory of God manifested through the church and through Jesus Christ. And in that order, through the church and through Jesus Christ. We would have thought he would have said Jesus first and then the church. But there he says at the end of Ephesians 3, through the church and through Jesus Christ, God's glory is revealed. Can you say that? Can I say that today without embarrassment and without shame? We dare not even look at those kind of verses today. We don't know what to do with this kind of verses. But that is the same case with Israel. Israel was for the glory of God. When they went into the land of promise and God handed that land over to them, under the reign of David, it was a glory in the earth. Its reputation spread far and wide, so that even the queen of Ethiopia came all the way to listen to the wisdom of Solomon and to behold the land of glory. She said, I have heard with my ears the glory of God manifested in this land. I came to see with my eyes. But it wasn't long and lasting. You see, Paul's day and our day, there's a gap of nearly 2,000 years. In his day, Paul could speak with joy and of glory in the church. It was not to say that the church had no faults. It was not to say that the church made no mistakes. But even with its faults and its mistakes, he could still say without embarrassment and without apology that it is the glory of Christ in the earth. But we can't do that today, can we? I wish we could. That's why it hurts my heart. What has happened is, you see, brothers and sisters, the walls have fallen. The walls have fallen. Great breaches are there in the walls for all to see. And just as we read in the prophets that the nations passed by Israel, and Israel became a source of scorning and scoffing to the nations, so have we become a source of scorning and scoffing in the eyes of the world. In the first century church, in the second century church, in spite of weaknesses and faults in the church, which I do emphasize, I don't gloss over or pretend that there were no faults, that the church in the New Testament was perfect. It was not perfect. But its imperfections are nothing to compare with our imperfections. In these 2,000 years, the walls of the church have fallen. The city set upon a hill is now a pitiful sight. It cannot be hidden. But that means not only its glory cannot be hidden, its faults cannot be hidden either in these last days. And that's why we come to Ezekiel 22 and verse 13. I feel again the pulse of God. When, like as he said of Israel, I looked through Israel and looked for one person who would stand in the gap and build the wall, I couldn't find one. That is my call to you today. I wonder if he, looking through us here, looking through his churches throughout the world, can he find one to stand in the gap before the church gets cut off? What did I say? I said before the church gets cut off. You say, how can you say a thing like that? Read Romans 11. Read it there. If the Jews were cut off, Paul goes on to say, so stand fast in God's kindness, because if you do not, you also will be cut off. And he's speaking to the church. The Jews got cut off. You remember that? Their walls fell down. They went into slavery, into defeat. And Paul says, without any apology, as a warning to the Roman Christians, the leading church of the day, of the Roman Empire, do not take God's grace and mercy for granted. Because if you fail, you also will be cut off. I say, I feel that the days of the church are much numbered. The days of the Gentiles, which is our time, is close to being over. The walls of the city of glory are breached in many places, and God looks for a man to stand in the breach. But again, my heart pained within me. Because as he could find hardly a man in the days of Israel, before he wiped Israel out, destroyed it, so he must have a hard time finding one today. Just as I remember the words in Philippians chapter 2, those words that are so painful when Paul says, I wanted to send somebody to you, he said to the Philippians, but I couldn't find anyone except Timothy. Because the others seek not the interests of God, but they seek their own interests. That's why he couldn't find anyone. You see, because everyone is seeking their own interests. In this generation too, in the church too. Let's not kid ourselves. If I ask people here to raise their hands, how many gents can genuinely say that this moment and this hour at this day, you are not living for your own interests? That you truly, genuinely, and unreservedly live wholly for the glory of God, to raise your hand, I won't put you to the embarrassment of doing so. because I fear that few could in all honesty say, I will raise my hand. By the grace of God, this is how I live. Not because I am good, but because by God's grace I am doing this. Paul could find only one, Timothy, and thanks be to God there was a Timothy around. Or else what will happen to the church? Would to God we understand his teaching. That if we are disciples, we follow Jesus. This is not for some high category of elite Christians. It is just for disciples. Whoever believes in me, John 14 says, will do the works that I do. And what were his works? What did he come into the world for? He tells us very plainly. The Son of Man came into the world, he said, to give his life a ransom for many. The works that I do, he will do also. I didn't set the standard, brothers and sisters. He set the standard. I dare not lower the standard. And if I am mistaken in my exegesis, then do please kindly point it out to me, for I am most desirous of learning. If in my ignorance I have said something untrue, kindly instruct me accordingly, because I assure you that I will be most teachable by the grace of God. The works that I do, the works that the Father entrusted me to do, namely that I should reveal him and do this, to do this through the cross, to lay down my life as a ransom for many, the works that I do, you shall do also. Let's not get the emphasis into miracles and other such things. We are talking about salvation. The Christ's ministry has to do with salvation, not just about doing some miracles. Those miracles were only to serve the purpose of revealing God's compassion and character to us, supremely manifested on the cross. Well, now, let's talk about those who stood in the gap. You know, the history of Israel is the history of those who stood in the gap. You know that? It has been nothing but the history of those who stood in the gap, because if there were not people who stood in the gap before, Israel would not even have lasted. Would not even have lasted until the destruction that the Babylonians brought under Nebuchadnezzar. They would not have lasted to the year 521 BC. They would have been wiped out long ago before that. But they survived even that long only because in every generation, by the mercies of God, there was one to stand in the gap. Until in the end, just before the destruction of Israel, there were no more to stand in the gap. You say, what do I mean? Let us turn for a moment to Psalm 106, verse 23. Psalm 106, verse 23. Moses was one who stood in the breach. Let me read this verse to you. Therefore he said he would destroy them, that is, destroy Israel in the wilderness. As you see from verse 19, that was because of the golden calf that they made in Horeb. And then verse 23, therefore he said, that is, God said that he would destroy them. Had not Moses, his chosen one, stood in the breach before God to turn away God's wrath from destroying them? You see, God, the history of Israel would have ended right there in the wilderness. There would have been no more history of Israel to write. It would have been finished right there in the wilderness had not Moses stood in the breach and turned God's wrath away. That is the history of Israel. The walls were built up, and there in the wilderness they collapsed again through sin, through unrighteousness. And there was Moses standing in the breach to turn back God's anger, as he interceded with God, pleaded, Lord, spare Israel. But if you don't want to spare them, then destroy me also. Write me out, blot me out of your book. Either you spare them, but if you destroy them, destroy me with them. I don't want to be otherwise treated. I hope that you will begin to see the spirit of what I'm sharing with you today. Many people think that I say these things to criticize the church. Do you think that the prophets took pleasure in criticizing Israel? Do you think the prophet Ezekiel, when he said that they were full of oppression and sin and vice and crime, do you think he took pleasure in condemning Israel? That he had some kind of a joy out of this? Are we so carnal as to think in this way? Or is it because he loved Israel to the point that he realized that Israel was about to be destroyed, and pleaded with them to turn again from their sin before it was too late. It was too late. I hope it is not for the church. And people say, why are you always speaking about the sins of the church and the failures of the church? As though they think I took some kind of joy in this matter. Or do they not know that our hearts grieve within us? Because in condemning the church, we condemn ourselves. But can we also come with this attitude and this spirit? Lord, if you are going to destroy the church in your wrath, I ask not to be spared, that I also may go with it, for I have failed in my duty and in my task. I failed to build up the walls of righteousness, so spare me not in the judgment of the church. That was Moses' word. If you are going to destroy Israel, then Lord, remember, you appointed me to lead Israel. I accept my guilt. I failed in leading this people in righteousness. Moses was not just being humble. He took upon himself the responsibility for the failure. And so blocked me out. But the Lord had already said, you are not guilty. I will make of you, Moses, a great nation, he said, before he was about to destroy Israel. I will make you a great nation. You have not failed. But Moses didn't want to accept that. He said, you gave me this nation to lead. I don't want to be a great nation apart from them. If you are going to destroy them, so destroy me with them. I would say that all those who just don't understand with what attitude we speak out against the church in these days, we speak, and God be our witness, with the same attitude as the prophet. We speak against the sins of the church. Why? Because the sins of the church can be hidden while the sins of unbelievers are to be exposed. Not in the least. We speak against the church because until the church is the light of the world will not turn to God. We can carry on with evangelism and we will produce only another generation of feeble Christians who will soon fall away themselves. Not until the church becomes what it is to become will we be able to fulfill our task in this generation. We are aiming simply to stand in the gap, to build the wall, in order that God may be pleased not to destroy it. You see, sin is what destroys the wall. Let's look at this. Let's see this in Isaiah chapter 30 and verse 13. Isaiah chapter 30 and verse 13. In this passage is another painful, striking passage. And again, to get its context, the context of verse 13, let us go back to verse 8 to see the whole picture. As Isaiah writes, under the instruction of the Lord. And the Lord says to Isaiah, now go write it before them on a tablet and inscribe it in a book, that it may be for the time to come as a witness forever. What's he to write? What's he to witness? For they are a rebellious people. Now you see, once again, Israel is being lambasted by the prophet of God. Is it because he takes pleasure in rebuking Israel? Verse 9, for they are a rebellious people, lying sons who will not hear the instruction of the Lord, who say to the seers, the other prophets, see not, and to the prophets, prophesy not to us what is right. Speak to us smooth things. Prophesy illusions. Remember the passage that our brother Joe was sharing with us. They look for preachers to scratch their ears. Their ears are itching and they need someone to scratch it to make them feel good. Speak to us smooth things. Prophesy illusions. Leave the way. Turn aside from the path. Let us hear no more of the Holy One of Israel. These are prophets who are telling the people to say, let's leave the path. Let's turn aside. We don't want to talk about the Holy One of Israel. Let's talk about the God of Israel. That's okay. Holy One. We don't holiness. We don't this kind of holy business. And then verse 13, therefore thus says the Holy One of Israel, because you despise this word and trust in oppression and perverseness and rely on them. Therefore this iniquity shall be to you listen to this, like a brick, a breach in a high wall, bulging out and about to collapse, whose crash comes suddenly in an instant, and its breaking is like that of a potter's vessel, which is smashed so ruthlessly that among its fragments not a sherd is found. It's so utterly broken that you can't use it to pick up hot coals, to transfer it to another place. You can't use it to pick up a bit of water out of the cistern. It is utterly smashed to pieces. There is the picture. And I want to tell you that this matter of the breach in the wall is so frequent, in such a common picture in the Old Testament, that is why I would like to expound this thing more fully to you. And this we will have to do in our next session, next Sunday, if the Lord wills. But here, grasp the picture. It is sin that destroys the wall. Your iniquity causes the wall of salvation to collapse. This is true also on an individual basis. In closing, let us read Proverbs chapter 25, verse 28. Proverbs 25, verse 28. And this is what we read here. A person who is not able to control his spirit is like a city broken into and left without walls. The walls are breached and useless. A person who does not know how to control his spirit, to restrain his spirit, is again pictured in this very picture of a city with broken walls, left without defense. What is a man, a person who cannot control his spirit? A person who is constantly falling into sin. He cannot control himself. He sees a pretty woman and he is lusting after her. He sees a beautiful car and he is coveting that car. He sees money and he cannot control himself. He is rushing after the money. He sees status and he is lusting for the status. He cannot control himself in this world. Every temptation drags him away. He falls under every temptation. And he says, so the scripture says, a man who cannot control his spirit is like a city with no wall. It is defenseless against sin, and therefore defenseless against the judgment of God. We need someone to build the wall, to stand in the gap. That is why one of the gifts of the Spirit is self-control, the ability to face temptation and to face it victoriously, because you can never win any temptation against any temptation unless you have self-control. And yet you cannot have this control apart from the Spirit of God. Our time is gone and we must close for today. We shall continue this important picture next week. In the meantime, I pray that you ponder these words. Look upon the glory of the church that once was. And I say to you, brothers and sisters, just as Jeremiah lamented over Jerusalem, when he saw it broken, collapsed, its walls crumbled, its glory destroyed, Jeremiah wept over that city. But you know, Jeremiah tried to stand in the breach. He did. They didn't want him. Until God's anger was so kindled against Israel that he said to Jeremiah, don't intercede for this people anymore because I don't want to hear the intercession. It is too late. My judgment will go forth against this people. The sin of this people is too great. Jeremiah tried to stand in the breach, but he got dragged away by the scruff of the neck, thrown into a pit. They don't want the likes of him. There comes a time in the stubbornness of one's heart where it is too late to avoid God's judgment. But next week we shall continue to look at this most important picture. But even though Jeremiah was rejected, such was his heart, that instead of saying to Jerusalem, there you are, you've got what you deserve, didn't I tell you? He is called the weeping prophet. When his words came to pass, when he warned that Israel would be cut off and was cut off, he wept over Jerusalem. The whole of Lamentations is the record of his weeping. That's why it's called Lamentations. I hope that you and I will not come to the day when we have to weep, when God will have cut off the church. But rather in a heart of compassion, in a heart of concern, in a heart of spiritual anxiety, when we see what Paul called the glory of Christ reduced to a pain and a scorn in the face of the earth, that we may weep over our new Jerusalem, weep over the church. and by God's grace to stand in the gap, that God's anger may yet be turned back, that the church may yet be rebuilt, its walls reestablished, and become again in these last days, as it has to be, a glory of God in the earth, that the people may be drawn into it and find salvation. Let us be quiet before God in prayer.